blowing in from off the river. It's 10 below out on these city streets, but the feeling in your heart is even colder. The sunrise screeching down the line, and the fog bank's running out of time. But you won't be here when they creep in. Now, I had the great pleasure recently of getting a copy of Crazy Dreams by Paul Brady, who I have interviewed over the years. And it's like a lot of things. As a fellow said, you think you know things, but you don't. That's only when somebody writes them down on paper you suddenly get the full story, or you get to understand other stories. Paul, good morning, firstly.
Well, good morning to you, Marty.
Dear heart, and good to see you
again. Nice to be here.
And may I say... it's a revelation, this book, this Crazy Dreams. Think it's seamless. Life isn't seamless, of course.
Of course. Well, I'm glad. There was a period halfway through writing it. I'm going, am I saying too much here? You know.
Yeah.
But you know, and there are times when you know you wonder why you did it all.
Yeah.
But life, as you say, is not seamless, and things went on that people don't know.
What made you decide to write the book down, to commit yourself to this?
Well, I suppose I kind of felt that where I grew up, which was right on the border of Tyrone and Donegal, in Strabane, Lifford, that, you know, I was brought up with two cultures, you know, the whole, and I went to a school in Sion Mills where it was one of the really rare school with Catholics and Protestants and boys and girls, a primary school.
Yes.
So that was normal for me growing up, and I had that culture of Northern Ireland, and I had the culture of the Republic, and that was interesting. And I also musically, for some reason which I don't understand, I ended up being kind of multilingual musically. Yeah. I was able to understand and feel for traditional music, which came later, I have to say, but also blues, jazz, pop and folk. And I just felt that I was in a sort of a reasonably unique position like that. There aren't too many musicians that have covered all that ground.
And you see, your folks, having both folks as teachers, so the house was full of all that sort of information that you were getting.
So I thought that might be a different take on things that might be interesting.
But your dad, if I remember correctly, your dad quite liked the amateur dramatics a bit. He liked to be on stage. So that we all inherit. We all inherit.
He was a really brilliant performer, my dad. You know, he sang, but that would his main talent would have been as an actor.
Yes.
And he loved, early on in his marriage, when we were very young, he produced a lot of plays and reviews and in Strabane, but also he was always called upon in public situations to do a turn.
Yeah,
you know, but he never became professional.
Oh, what would he sing? What would he sing when he
would?
Well, sing?
I mean, he would sing. He had a love of a lot of Latin American songs from the 30s and 40s, like La Paloma and La Golondrina and songs like that. Which were sort of. They stuck with me a lot, and I used to accompany him on the piano.
Yes.
When I was like 12 or 13, and he'd be getting up in Bundoran to do a spot, you know, and I would be playing the piano with him, you know. So that's where I fell in love with that kind of music from South America, which then became, strangely enough, the basis for the tune The Island.
It's incredible.
Well, The Island is, if you speed The Island up musically, it's like a tango. you know. Yeah. And so that was what was going around my head all the time when I was a kid, that kind of music.
Isn't
which
that
my father loved.
Yeah.
They say the skies of Lebanon are burning, those mighty cedars bleeding in the heat. They're showing pictures on the television, women and children dying in the street. Now we're still at it in our own place, still trying to reach the future through the past, still trying to carve tomorrow from a tombstone. But hey, don't listen to me, 'cause this wasn't meant to be no sad song. We've heard too much of that before. Right now I only wanna be here with you till the morning dew comes falling. I wanna take you to the island and trace your footprints in the sand. And in the evening when the sun goes down, we'll make love to the sound of the ocean. They're raising banners over by...
One of the things, I not to dwell on it too much, but the Johnston story is an amazing story. And I'm talking about Crazy Dreams, Paul Brady's autobiography. We won't labour it, but it amazes me how you, as a fine musician, and you're with these other fine singers and musicians, and it isn't working, and you're trying to keep it head above water, you end up going to America and everything. It's an amazing story of how on earth you survive when you're on a promise, we'll do this, we'll do that. Yeah. You were doing great business in Ireland.
Yeah.
You went to the UK, doing great business, the folk clubs, all that. And then you go to the States and it just doesn't click.
Yeah.
But there was a fella kind of putting it down. There was a fella pretending to be doing everything God's earth for you, but he wasn't at all. I'm astonished by that story of survival. Like whatever is in you, that ability to survive.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean...
When you've nothing.
Yeah. Obviously, it was a very low point in my life.
Yeah.
And I was very young. I was in my early 20s. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I wanted. And again, because I was sort of... I could throw my hand at lots of different types and styles of music.
Yeah.
I was confused myself about who I was what direction I wanted to go in. I mean, I loved traditional music and I loved folk songs, but I also loved rhythm and blues
and a songwriter trying to get out.
Yeah. So I mean, I was prime subject for abuse at the time, you know, and I really felt that sometimes I didn't know what I was doing. You know?
But it's amazing. There's a man in the book. You buy the book and you'll find out what his name is, even if it turns out it wasn't his real name at all. It's an amazing story, and you're doing bar work and stuff. I'm astonished at that whole period in America where you have to make a few bob, and then it's like the penny drops, and you have to gather yourself, which you did, obviously.
Yeah.
But it is about that. The other thing, just to hark back to one thing, I love the stories of Bundoran.
Right.
I love the stories of Bundoran. We went on a holiday. We lived in Dublin. You lived close enough.
Yeah.
We went to Bundoran twice, and one of the great memories I have of Bundoran is buying old singles that were on a jukebox, but had the centre cut out.
Yeah.
And I got Bob Dylan's Lay Lady Lay was one of them. I never forgot it. It's
right.
Gas, isn't it?
Lord.
You know, it's just one of those mad moments where you look back on things. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was very central. I mean, it was the place we went every year.
But
you
it
know,
was so. Hugely, like it was like a mecca for
people. Yeah, I mean, we started off in a boarding house and then we moved up to the mobile home and, you know, but every summer, like, I mean, my mother and father were teachers, as you said, so we had long summer holidays.
That's right. And was it Bundoran you were doing the gigs? When you were doing gigs in the early days?
Well, Bundoran, yes, was where I started. You know, where I my father would they'd go out every evening. They were on holidays, and you know they'd go to various different establishments, yeah, like the hotels in Bundoran, and they quite often were in the Holyrood. And I found myself in there many times. Rather than sit at home, like, I would go out with my parents, and when I was like a young teenager, yeah, and drink the Club Orange in the corner, sort of thing.
Yes, yeah.
And then when I started to accompany my father, you know, I got noticed that I could handle the piano, and then I was asked to become part of the house band. We're talking early 60s now, 60,
sure,
62, 63.
Yeah.
And my job at the time, I suppose, was to back up anybody who came up from the floor, you know. And
it's like a wedding thing, isn't it? Yeah,
well, it wasn't even as formal as a wedding. It
was no, I mean, you wouldn't know whether there'd be any use, like, when
they
come
up. Oh, yeah, all right.
Chord changes, all that.
Yeah, that kind of way, you know. And, I mean, the song would enter very many chords, keys from the start to the finish.
That's right.
And you'd be chasing around the piano
that's
after
right,
it, you know.
Yeah. The words mightn't be necessarily accurate. Yeah. Yeah.
But it was a great training in...
Sure.
And not being frightened of the black notes, you know.
That's very true. And also a few bob at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well,
from playing music.
Relatively few.
Well, very few, I know, at the time. I know. Different times. Things have changed. That's one of the things that also came out in the book. And I suppose it again harks back to your past, the idea of being on the outside, of never quite fitting in. I'm wondering, because I think about yourself, you know, you think about Planxty, or you think about yourself and Andy Irvine, and these things that you did that were huge, successful, and then on to another thing. So I got the impression that as you went along the way, even though you enjoyed it, made friends, lifelong friends, but there was always that outsider thing with you, that you were never quite.
Yeah, well, I was never quite prepared to become part of any movement.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
But it wasn't just a case of that. I mean, it was like, I mean, I had this big toy box and there was loads of different toys in it.
Yeah.
You know, one was traditional music, the other was jazz, the other was this. And I mean, everybody going around was saying, oh, you can only be a jazz fan and this radio station can only play this kind of music and that kind of music. And I had all these toys and I'm, you know, I can play with any of these toys, you know.
Yes, yeah.
And why is everybody so rigidly exclusive, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed perfectly normal to me that to have a wide variety of styles that you could manage.
Yes.
It was only when I grew older that I realised that it was unusual.
And also you needed to be alone. You needed to be you. To be Paul Brady and Lights and say,
yeah,
this is who I am.
Yeah.
And now I can do whatever the
I mean,
I
mean,
want.
No, very few people knew who Paul Brady was, including Paul Brady. You know,
yeah, I take the point.
And
yeah,
so, I
yeah,
mean,
yeah, yeah,
it's that kind of way. It was a voyage of discovery. A lot of my blundering through the early years in the music.
Yeah, but it's also about survival again. We're back to that. It's about the innate ability to say, "Hang on a second, I have a talent," or whatever I have, yeah, I'm ploughing ahead.
Well, I know things. It's easy to say so, but I mean, I like to say simply that my mother gave me the drive and my father gave me the talent.
That's fair enough.
You know, I mean, and my mother always said, no one is going to put us down. No one is going to put us down.
But that's a great lesson to learn when you're small.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, I mean, she taught in the school where we went.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, you were always aware that you had to shape up a little bit more than the other side, if you know what I mean.
So it makes you go the extra mile, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it surely does. It has to, it's inevitable.
The time has come for me to go. The open highway calls me back to do these things I do. But when I'm traveling far away, your friendship I recall.
as we go back to the book in Crazy Dreams, there's a story. Mark Knopfler played a huge part as well, when I think you put it in Dire Straits, because your relationship with him and the fact that you're both great musicians and you both just got on so well. And then you had the management thing with them. I don't want to give away too much because I'm determined that people buy this and make a few bob for you. It's very important. But the other thing about the Mark Knopfler story, which I love, to go back, you toured with you played with Dire Straits. Also with Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
I want you to please give me the story about the Eric Clapton party. You did a tour with Eric Clapton and you did support to him, but you became very pally.
Yeah.
But the story of you in his house, I didn't realise. I scribbled it down. In the Guildford City Hall, he has that as his last date when he finishes the tour.
Yeah.
So it's close to his house.
Traditionally, that's where he would finish up his UK tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you ended up at a party in the house.
Yeah.
And I just love the story of you separating yourself from all the great and the good and Billy Connolly and all these people. It's all lovely. And you headed off down the hall.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, I was just wandering around. And a lot of the people I didn't know, because there were a lot of Eric's stockbroker-built friends who were there and all that. And, and I didn't,
some of them might have spoons with the Queen's head on it.
Indeed. And I found myself just, wandering around.
Yeah.
And I came into this sort of room where there was a piano. And there was the hubbub was going on up in the other part of the house. So I just sat down and I just started twittering away at the piano, and I started to play a song of mine called "The Road to the Promised Land." It's actually from the Heart Station
album.
Heart
Station, yes.
And there was nobody in the room. And the next minute, I'm into the second verse, and I hear somebody playing the guitar behind me. And I kind of, rather than stop, I just kept on going. And at the end of the tune, I turned around, and there was Eric Clapton sitting there playing the guitar, acoustic guitar, just him and me in the room, and the party going on up the corridor, roaring and shouting. He decided he wanted a bit of space too,
but he knew the song.
Oh, he knew the song.
That's the point.
And then he said, "Play us the Lakes of Pontchartrain."
Oh, sure.
And he knew everything about it. You see, I have to thank Albert Lee, guitar player Albert Lee, because it was he who introduced Eric to my music. Albert played with Eric's band for quite a few years. In fact, he was playing with it when I was opening for Eric back in 83. And so he had discovered my traditional album, Welcome Here, Kind Stranger, and he had played all this to Eric, and then they'd got into Heart Station, my first album of my own songs.
Yeah.
And so Eric knew all the stuff, and I mean, that was why he'd asked me to open for him.
Yes, for sure.
He liked the sound of it,
I just think it's a great story, and everybody kind of eventually coming in to join that.
Yeah, they all came in and wondered, where's Eric? Oh, he's down in the room with that piano player.
It's a great story. And it's a great song, Road to the Promised Land, from Heart Station. Tell you I don't understand, and he said, what are you hoping to gain? Rocking this boot and you'll end up capsizing, throwing it all down the drain. Set to quit chasing the end of the rainbow, told me we'd find nothing there. But you I want to show you this. I did a list. I went on a hunt of people who have recorded your songs. Now, this, I've no doubt in my mind, is not anywhere close. Curtis Tigers, of course, is a mate of yours now, isn't he?
Yeah.
But like Carole King, there's a great picture of you with Carole King in there. Obviously, Eleanor McAvoy. Tina Turner. I saw you on stage with Tina Turner. Right. What a moment that must have been.
Oh yeah.
When she recorded two songs, Steel Claw.
No. She cut two songs. Yeah, but that day I only sang one.
You only sang the one.
The one.
And I just astonished. Like Tina, Cher, for God's sake, to Steel Claw. Like it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you think about it, Tricia Yearwood.
It's funny, a story with Cher.
Yeah.
I was touring in America.
I never thought I'd hear Paul Brady say I have a story for you.
This is really. I mean, I knew Cher had recorded my song "Paradise Is Here."
That's right.
And it
that was the other one Tina Turner did.
Yes. But I was driving home from a gig somewhere in Albany, New York, one night. We were driving back to the city, and we stopped at a filling station to top up, and I went into the shop, and I heard this dance track, you know, go boom, ba, boom, ba, boom, ba, you know, and suddenly someone was singing, and I says, I know that song. That's my song. That's, hang on. Paradise is here, and it was a dance version of my song "Paradise Is Here" that I didn't even know existed.
That's incredible, isn't it?
You know,
fantastic.
Do you get more
money if it's a dance version?
I don't know.
but the thing is, the thing about these things is that when and again, I want to I'll mention Jimmy Buffett without doubt, but John Prine records your song. I mean, when you think about that, when you think about, you know, and Cliff, obviously. When you think about all that, it's phenomenal that it has happened in such a way. There are lots of people writing songs, and two people might record their work, or somebody might say, that's a great song, but they don't do a version. But the amount of people who've recorded your work is actually quite a list. And it's top of the range. This is not people just kind of having a go. This is,
well,
I know I don't want to blow smoke, but you know what I mean? It's a very big deal.
Well, that has been a huge advantage to my career, definitely.
And all the swim pools that you want to build. I found a photograph I want to share with you. I'm going to show you this picture. Do you recognise those two boys?
Oh my God. Weren't we the good looking pair?
We haven't changed a bit. I think it was a reception, I'd say.
It's funny because that was in my contact lens period.
I eventually
put my glasses back on because nobody knew who I was.
Is that why you got rid of the tie? Because you're wearing a shirt and tie and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it a great picture?
That's very nice, actually.
That must be the early 2FM days.
I'll have to take a scan of that.
You put it in the second book.
Yeah.
one of the songs that I have loved for years and years, and it's very hard sometimes when I'm talking to you or imagining you and thinking about the music that you play, to pick one, and I'm not going to pick one. But there are so many wonderful songs that have influenced and played a part. And I think for me, one of the funniest ones was one of the later ones when you worked with Jimmy Buffett.
Right.
I've been a Jimmy Buffett fan for donkeys, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Come Monday and Pirate Looks at 40 and all these great songs.
Yeah, yeah.
I was astonished that not one, was it three songs you got on the album? The last album.
Yeah.
And we were in the Olympia, and out comes Paul Brady again. That was phenomenal.
Well, the funny thing about it was... The funny thing about it was that hardly anybody in the audience knew who I was because they were all American fans.
They were all dressed
with the parrot heads.
The parrot heads, that's right.
You know, and Jimmy like, that's a really strange experience.
It was surreal. Yeah. Well, we were the ones clapping mildly when you came on. But that must have been a great bit of fun. You had a ball that night.
I did.
You did, yeah.
Well, I have a ball on stage now. I mean, in the 80s, as I struggled, I might have had a reputation for being a bit morose, but
who told you that?
I always enjoy myself on stage now. Life is way too short.
Well, you're right. I remember going to see you as well in Vicar Street when you did that series. How many nights did you do in Vicar Street?
23.
I don't know how we happened to be on the night with Brendan Boyer and Van.
Right.
I mean, astonishing.
Oh, wasn't that great, actually?
Astonishing.
I mean, Van and Brendan together. Yeah.
But the three of you. Like,
Van was a huge fan of the Royal Show Band, you know.
Yeah.
And when he was in the Monarch Show Band.
That's right, that's right.
The Royal Show Band were top of the heap. And he would have loved Brendan Boyer. And he did. And he was having such fun with him.
He was smiling away on the stage. Was he was loving it. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
You know, but that was great because you hadn't advertised who'd be on stage. So It could have been anybody would have arrived any of the nights.
Yeah.
But again, a total sellout, you know? Yeah. You still love being on stage, though. I could see that when we saw you with Jimmy Buffett. I still love it.
I do, yeah. I do, you know. I mean, I suppose less and less I like the whole fuss before you get on stage, but
I know.
Being on stage is great.
Yeah, I know. I was going to mention, not that I wanted to get into particular songs, I have to mention The Long Goodbye.
Yeah.
I still think that's one of the most beautiful songs I know.
Well, that's a song I wrote with Ronan Keating.
Yeah, I know.
And
people would have said an unlikely pairing, maybe?
Yeah, well, it was undoubtedly an unlikely pairing, but it worked out. And you know, we wrote another song called The Price of Fame, which was on my Hooba Dooba album.
Yes.
And I think that's a strong song, too.
I know they say if you love somebody, you should set them free, so they say. But it sure is hard to do. Yeah, it sure is hard to do. And I know they say if they don't come back again, then it's meant to be, so they say. But those words don't pull me through, 'cause I'm still in love with you. I spend each day waiting for a miracle, but it's just you and me going through the mill, climbing up a hill. This is the long goodbye. Somebody tell me why two lovers in love can make it. Just what kind of love keeps them big and hard? No matter how hard we try, you're gonna make me cry. Come on, maybe it's over, let's face it. Sometimes I ask my heart, did we really give our love a chance? Just one more chance. But I know without a doubt that we turn it inside out. And if we walked away, it would make more sense. Only self-defense. But it tears me up inside just to think we still could try.
This writing thing that you did, the Carole King business and all that I was amazed that you would, that this is where you all came together, like a writing...
To this place in France.
Kind of writing school. Can you explain?
Well, it was a chateau owned by Miles Copeland, who managed the police at the time.
Yeah.
He was managing the police at the time. And, you know, a whole bunch of publishers got together and, you know, subsidised a get-together of their writers in this chateau south of Bordeaux. And we were there. We'd be there for a week, and the thing was you wouldn't know who you were going to be writing with every day. Like, somebody went around with a foolscap saying, Paul Brady, today you're writing with Mark Hudson and Carole King, you know. And I would go, okay. you know.
Good Lord.
And
but you did.
Yeah, but I did, and I found that that was a new move for me, because I hadn't co-written at all in the previous decade and a half. I mean, the first five or six albums I put out, everything on it was written by me. And it was only in the mid-90s, when I kind of started to slow down a bit, that I started to work with other writers.
Yes, yes.
And I found that that opened a whole other door in me, because I didn't have to be emotionally burning throughout the song. It could be somebody else's feeling that I was writing music about. And,
sure.
And that allowed me to discover other types of music that I was, you know, sort of fluent in, but that I would never let myself get involved in, because I would think that, oh, that's not a Paul Brady song, you know.
Yeah, you'd be unsure.
I mean, but The Long Goodbye was actually a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
I sat looking at that song for about 2 or 3 years as a demo, thinking, that's not a Paul Brady song. That's too pop, you know. Nobody liked that.
And it's loved.
And the minute I put it out, you know, it's still one of the most popular ones.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, as the fella said, nobody knows, to quote another song. Nobody does.
I know, Amy, it's just stupid the way you have these notions.
Well,
you know,
I suppose.
And you have notions about who you know, what your style is and what your image is. And
yeah. But maybe that's because you've been through these various phases, but always keeping the fact that you were all of these things.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being all of these things either. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with that either. And being confident in that realm, it seems to me. I mean, I remember you, when I interviewed you many years ago, we were very small boys at the time, and you came in with a guitar, and I remember you sang... It was Arthur McBride who sang in front of me. I'll never forget it as long as I live. It was a radio station that we dare not mention its name anymore. But anyway, does that confidence to just be, and you have that confidence to write, to sing, to perform, will you stop or will you keep it going, Patsy? I mean, are you still happy to say, do you know what, we're going to do another week somewhere or another...
Well, I mean, every year it's like, next year, you know, I'm going to slow down a bit.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I'm going to spend more time doing this or that, or less time doing
this. With the lovely Mary Elliott.
Oh, indeed, yeah.
Yep.
You know, I'd love to spend more time with family, regrettably, at the moment, none of them are in Ireland.
Right.
So my son and his family are in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And, my daughter and her family are in the UK.
Yeah.
And
but you visit, you go, and you see.
I mean, it's been 2 or 3 years. It's the whole COVID thing. Of course, New Zealand closed down completely.
Sure.
Fortress New Zealand.
Yeah.
But we're going back in January again for a month.
Brilliant.
And you know, that'll be good. But you know, when it's all over, it makes you realise how much you're actually missing all the time.
Yes, yeah, very true, very true. Yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go. I just want to let people know that the book is a joy, and it's called Crazy Dreams, and I love it. And if people, apart from the story, there's a picture of you. Is the picture of you with Bob Dylan?
All right,
it's just hilarious. I went down to that gig. That's in Slane, right?
Yeah,
that was Slane, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's the gig I went down to. Just part of 2FM. I went down to the gig, and I was a Santana fan.
Right.
Who have recorded you, by the way.
That was my first cover, actually.
Yeah, was it?
Night Hunting Time.
Night Hunting Time, that's right.
From Hard Station.
That's right. Well, I went down... I was a huge fan of Santana. You're going to hate this. I went down for Santana, and when they left the stage, I went home. I didn't stay for Dylan. But I love your story. Just to finish, I have to finish on this one. Your story of... was it a journalist found the caravan?
Yeah.
You were in chatting to Bob Dylan, having the chats. And you have a great picture in the book. But somebody arrived at the door.
Someone who was very drunk.
Oh,
and
right.
How they got through security, I don't know.
Right.
Stumbled into the caravan where Dylan and I were sitting.
Right.
And he freaked completely. And that's the photograph of us coming out of the caravan is exactly...
Is him freaking.
Him freaking.
Great. Paul, it's been a pleasure.
That's been great fun.
Keep the faith. I really enjoyed it. Good to see you again.
Oh,
God
thank
bless you.
You.
What will I finish on? What Paul Brady song will I finish on? What do you want? What do you want me to play? Play a bit of Jimmy
Buffett. The Price of Fame.
The Price of Fame. Deal done.
We make a choice, somebody. We look for blame. We both pay the price of fame. The price of fame. Who we are is plain to see. months now that separated you and me. The life we lived and the dreams we made. The lovers lost with all those games we played. And now you think it's me who's changed. And everything that's happening was prearranged. Okay, I guess the page was turned. And suddenly I looked around, our bridge was burned. Why am I still trying to explain? Am I the only one who feels ashamed? Part of me is part of you. But I still miss the special thing. In this place, maybe in my moment I might have lost some grace. I know you're thinking I left the past behind, but out of sight don't mean it's out of mind. So why am I still trying to explain?
Price of Fame, music from Paul Brady, and loved our chat, and the book is Crazy Dreams, and it's an absolute must.